Did you know that some of the keys to unlocking the mysteries of the last book of the Bible are found in the first book of the Bible? Here's Skip Heitzig to explain.
This is why knowing the Bible is so important, because when you know the Bible, it makes the last book of the Bible a whole lot easier to understand. It's not a tough book, the book of Revelation. All of the idiomatic expressions are already unlocked in previous books of the Bible. And so when you're familiar with them, you go, oh, I remember that. And therefore, that's the interpretation.
Make the connection at the foot of the cross. Study the Word of God and find the way into His love. And take the time to read, for Jesus took the time.
Have you ever had one of those days? You know, the type of day where everything just seems to go from bad to worse? You aren't really doing anything different, you're just going about life like you always have, but no matter what you do, things just keep getting worse. I think we've all had a day or two like that, and today in The Connection, Skip Heitzig explores an extreme example of that as we continue to study the life of Joseph. Truth is, this guy had a few pretty bad days that turned into pretty bad years. Yet in the midst of it all, Joseph's attitude never changed. We'll find out more in just a moment, but first, if you really want to master it, one of the attitudes we must change is towards our money. So here's something to help you do that.
Benjamin Franklin once stated that the only two certainties in life are death and taxes. You know you're going to die, and you know every April 15th you need to pay taxes, but is there a way to be smarter about them? The Bible has plenty of advice on both topics, but for a little extra advice to help you be smart with your finances, this month The Connection is offering Dave Ramsey's book, The Total Money Makeover, for a special price of just $20. In 7 easy-to-follow steps, you can get out of debt and learn how to be a wise financial steward. From money myths to creating a nest egg for those rainy days to getting rid of debt, learn how to be smarter with your money. Call 1-800-922-1888 to order your copy of The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey, or order online at connectionradio.org. Taxes, like death, are inevitable, but there are ways to be smarter with your money. Order The Total Money Makeover from The Connection for just $20 at 1-800-922-1888.
Early in his life, it seemed like everything was going Joseph's way. But as so often happens when you're having one of those days, things turned out far different at the end than how they looked at the beginning. We'll get started with today's study here in just a moment, so don't go anywhere.
And make the connection.
We continue today in Genesis chapter 37, so if you'll turn there in your Bibles, we'll join Skip Heitzig.
Joseph, the dreamer of dreams. It's pretty interesting that Joseph's own dreams get him into trouble. And keep this in mind, 13 years later, someone else's dreams will get him out of trouble. Because God will give him the ability to unlock the secret meaning of other people's dreams. And it will be accurate as from the Lord. Verse 9, then he dreamed still another dream, oh boy, and told it to his brothers. See what I mean by naive? And he said, look, I've dreamed another dream. And this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down to me. The first dream, if his dad would have heard about it, maybe he thought, well, he's just a kid. You guys, come on, brush it off. Give him a break. Get over it. He's just 17 years old. He's a kid. But now, he's got his attention. Now he's troubled over this. This is getting personal. So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? What's the answer to that? Will they? Yes, Yes, yes. Everything he is dreaming will happen. They will bow down to him as he occupies that notable position in Egypt. Now watch this. And his brothers envied him. That's to be expected. But his father kept the matter in mind. Maybe this isn't from a late-night lox and bagel episode the night before. Maybe really this dream is from God. After all, if somebody would know about God speaking through dreams, it would be Jacob. Yes? Chapter 28, he had his own dream of the angels of God descending and ascending from earth to heaven. And the Lord spoke to him. The covenant God made a promise to him. And he woke up the next day and called it Beth-El, the house of God, the place where God is. God is in this place, and I knew it not. So he's thinking, okay, maybe this is from the Lord, and indeed it was. Now, there's a very important passage. I just got to stop here. Here we are in the first book of the Bible. The very last book of the Bible mentions also the sun and the moon and the stars. Remember that? If you don't, either write in your margin to look at later or look at now if you are quick to turn to Revelation chapter 12, where it says, "Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then being with child, she cried out in labor and pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his head. And he drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. And so she bore a male child who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And the child was caught up to God and to his throne." I've always been fascinated as to how many interpretations for the woman in Revelation chapter 12 exist. One of the most prominent and popular ones is that the woman in Revelation 12 represents the church. It's the church going through tribulation. It's the church suffering during that era. Well, if it's the church, she's got a problem because she's pregnant. And that doesn't fit the description given by Paul as the virgin bride of Christ. Here's what's great. There's only one other place in the Bible where sun, moon, and 12 stars are given, and the interpretation is given. And that's in our passage in Genesis 37. And Jacob, Joseph's father, gives the interpretation because he knows exactly what the sun, the moon, and the stars are. It represents himself, Jacob, Jacob's wife, or Joseph's mother, Rachel, and all of his brothers, which are the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel. So now we don't have to guess what it is and just pull out some random interpretation because we think it fits best our eisegetic theology. But we can say, oh, I know what the answer is. It represents Israel. And you would be right. It represents the nation of Israel. This is why knowing the Bible is so important, because when you know the Bible, it makes the last book of the Bible a whole lot easier to understand. It's not a tough book, the book of Revelation. All of the idiomatic expressions are already unlocked in previous books of the Bible. And so when you're familiar with them, you go, oh, I remember that. And therefore, that's the interpretation. And so that's just an important tie-in from Genesis 37 to Revelation chapter 12. Now back to chapter 37 of Genesis. Then his brothers, verse 12, went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. Now that's 60 miles north. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And so he said to him, "Here I am." And he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me." That is not a really wise thing he's doing. So he sent him out out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. It's quite common for people who have flocks and herds and are feeding them to look for pasture land in greener areas. And Shechem was higher elevation, and times of the year would have much more verdant possibilities for the animals. However, do you remember what happened in Shechem? Shechem was the place where Simeon and Levi, two of the sons of Jacob, committed mass murder when their sister Dinah was raped. And you remember that Jacob had to leave and flee in a hurry because he was afraid the blood is really bad here. We got to get out of town. But now years have passed. And he sends his boys back to Shechem because he still owns a piece of property back there. It's his land. So he sends them up to his land. But now he's having second thoughts. Because there is no doubt bad blood still between the Shechemites and my boys, I better send Joseph up there with his fancy little coat and see how they're working. Verse 15, now a certain man found him. And there he was, wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, "What are you seeking?" He said, "I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they're feeding their flocks." The man said, "They've departed from here. For I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Dothan is 10 miles north of Shechem. So if Shechem is 60 miles north of Hebron, go another 10 miles, you go to the city of Dothan. But Dothan happened to be on the caravan routes. This is why it's important. Dothan was on the caravan routes that went from the Mediterranean westward, eastward, inland. And it would connect with the main caravan route that went from Syria, Damascus, all the way down to Egypt. Which brings us to really the highlight and the mystique of our story. Now, verse 18. When they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. And they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. We'll see what will become of his dreams." But Reuben heard about it, and he delivered him out of their hands. That's the eldest, the firstborn. And he said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might be delivered from out of their hands and bring him back to his father." They see Joseph. They remember the dreams. It's as if they're saying, "Look, you might be a dreamer, but we're a bunch of pragmatists. And we're going to make sure that your dream never comes to pass. We're going to kill you." Reuben had already messed up and wasn't in great terms with his dad. So I think in order to win back his father's favor, he goes, "No, we can't do this." Seeking to deliver Joseph from out of their hands. And it says that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty and there was no water in it. Why'd they strip the robe off of him? Because that robe, now it shows the very focus of their disdain. That robe represented the special relationship that this young boy had with his father. And that was what they were envious of. They didn't have that relationship. Dad didn't love them as much as dad loved him. As shown by that coat. And every time we see that stupid coat, it reminds us of that. So let's take off that stupid coat. And they did. They stripped him. And they put him in a pit. Now the pit was a cistern. If you've read through the scriptures, you're familiar with the term cistern. But really, until you go to Israel and see a cistern, you have no clue what a cistern is like. Cisterns were dug out of the ground. Now the ground in Israel is usually, most everywhere, solid rock, like concrete. So what they would do is they would dig out by hand, hammer and chisel, And it would take months or years to dig this huge cavernous hole to store water. Because in the Middle East, it's the rain from heaven, Deuteronomy 11, that God says, I will water the earth with. So in the ancient days, they couldn't walk into their kitchen and turn the faucet and have water come out of the sink. And because they didn't have an abundance of water in that land, like in places where there are great rivers, they had to collect rainwater. So every time it would rain, they would build diversion channels, and the channels would empty into these holes or cisterns. Once they would dig them out, then a plasterer would come in and lay a nice layer of sealant plaster around that cistern. In Israel, in the Garden Tomb, the place where some people believe Jesus was buried and then rose from the dead, there's one cistern they've discovered that could hold 250,000 gallons of water. Now you have an idea of this huge hole. And this is the background for some very important scriptures. Like in Jeremiah, where the Lord said in chapter 2, my people have committed two evils. Number one, they have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters. Number two, they have dug out cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water. You can imagine how frustrating it would be if you spent months and months and months digging out of solid rock your cistern, only to discover that there's a fissure in the rock, and that maybe even by a little bit of seismic activity, it was made worse, so you put water in it, it all empties out. My people have left me a fountain of living water, an artesian well, and they're drinking out of broken cisterns that can't hold water. So many of our experiences can't hold water, and yet we try to drink from them and be refreshed by them. So that's the cistern. There's this big empty pit, and it was empty because it wasn't the rainy season. It hadn't rained, so there's no water in it. And it's a great place to store a prisoner, so they put him in the cistern because it says there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. They lifted up their eyes and looked. There was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, myrrh on the way to carry them down to Egypt. That's the caravan route I was telling you about. So Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brothers and conceal his blood? You know, let's make some money off of this. Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Okay, so which group was it that got Joseph? Was it the Ishmaelites or the Midianites? I mean, it's a bit confusing. You read it and says, well, these Ishmaelites were coming out, so they sold them to the Midianites. And then the Ishmaelites took them. It's like, well, so which one? Answer, both. Here's how it worked. If you remember, Ishmael was the son of Abraham through Hagar, the Egyptian handmaiden of Sarah. Midian was also the son of Abraham through his second wife, Keturah. Both children of Abraham, both became sizable nomadic nations. But in the early stages, which is now, in their nascent stages, they're just small groups of people. And typically, when caravans would travel down to do commerce, business with any notable empire like Egypt, they would travel together in bands. They would form alliances together. It would add to the strength of bargaining. So both were together, the Ishmaelites and the Midianites, and they took Joseph down to Egypt. That's just to clarify that if you're wondering. They sold him for 20 pieces of silver. Now that's the price of a handicapped slave. That's what he was worth to them. They were making a statement about how they did not value him. Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes, and he returned to his brothers and said, the lad is no more, and I, where shall I go? So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in blood. Do you remember a few weeks ago when we skipped ahead to Genesis 49, and that's the scene when Jacob is on his deathbed and he's prophesying over all his kids. Remember what he says about his son Reuben? He says, Reuben is unstable as water. Sort of like what it says in the book of James, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. That was Reuben. He hates his brother. He wants him out of the picture. He doesn't really want to kill him. He then leaves for a while, then he comes back. Here's the point. This guy was so vacillating in his life, he now lacks the ability to exert any meaningful influence on people around him. And here's the principle. Half-hearted godliness can never withstand active wickedness. If a person is not filled with conviction and lays down what he believes in and how he'll behave and what's important to him, if it's just sort of, yeah, kind of, meh, when he's around other people like the brothers, they'll sway him. He won't be able to influence them. They'll influence him, in fact. So half-hearted godliness can never withstand active wickedness. That sort of sums up this man's life. Oh, but there'll be more of him before we are done.
Well, in a way, I guess you might consider Reuben to be the Charlie Brown of this group. Just sort of wishy-washy all the time. Of course, the fascinating thing about the life of Joseph is no matter how dire the situation may seem, God is always working to put Joseph exactly where he needs to be. We still have a lot more to explore in this amazing story, but we're going to have to pause for today before we run out of time. And before I tell you how to get a copy of today's teaching, here's Skip and Lenya with a few words of encouragement. Lenya?
I don't know about you, but I can have one of those days. I don't know. Sometimes it's one of those years. I don't know. But sometimes we just have a tough day. It just goes wrong and never gets right. And so have you ever had one of those days, or what's your worst day? And what's something that can help us cope with those days?
Yeah, I don't have many bad days, but I have had some notable ones. The one that immediately comes to my mind is when my father called me and told me my brother had just been killed in a motorcycle accident. And the bottom of my life just fell out because he was the closest in my family to me. And it was one of those experiences that I never expected would happen to me. That's one day. The other day is when you, dear, came out of surgery and the doctor looked in my eyes and said it was malignant. And then he proceeded to tell me what he was going to do about it. And I remember I walked in the bathroom at the hospital and I just broke down. It was one of those horrible. I knew I would get through it. And how I got through it is it was a dark day, but I remembered what I learned in the light. And a little saying that has helped me is, never deny in the darkness what you've learned in the light. There's certain things you don't see when it's dark, like most things you don't see. But you know they're there. The room's dark, but you know they're there anyway, and you can walk into them if you're not careful. So the darkness, you know, whether it's physical darkness or psychological, emotional, spiritual darkness, there is still light, and you still have to believe, like Joseph. We're dealing with Genesis. Joseph learned things about God in the light, and one of the things he learned is that God works all things together for good. You don't see it today. You will see it later.
That's such a blessing because sometimes the worst things can become the best things. You know, the Lord has a way of redeeming everything and working all things together for good. And he can give us beauty for ashes and the oil of joy for mourning and the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness. So in God's economy, a worst can become a best.
What an epiphany that is. We just met with a couple yesterday who are dealing with and are still in a very difficult situation. And for that wife to say to us, as horrible as it was, I really do see that God put us in that, and what is coming out of it was fruitful.
Yes, his mercies are new every morning.
Well, thanks for that good word, guys. And if you'd like a copy of what we covered today, we'd be happy to send you that as well. Just call 1-800-922-1888 and ask for a copy of today's teaching. Or you can also order online at connectionradio.org. Plus, if you contact us for the first time today, we'll also send you a free bonus teaching from Skip. So call today, won't you? 1-800-922-1888. Or write us at The Connection. That's P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection.
Finish up with Genesis 37 next time, so be sure to set aside some time to join us here on The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.